Hi there, this is Mike Quinn. You'll know me as Nine Numb in Star Wars, and you're listening to the McSauce Podcast.
Welcome to episode 305 of the McSauce Podcast. My name is Paul McGinty. With me, as always, are Ian the Sauce Sharpley.
Hello.
And Matt Cassell.
Hey, what's up?
It is Monday night, December 2nd, and tonight we're going to talk a little what you've been doing. The three of us have read some books, seen some movies, watched some TV shows. We're going to do a little roundabout what we've been up to, and then we're gonna
holiday recap.
Yeah, little Thanksgiving recap, and then we're gonna close up with a new segment called the Mando Minute, because we all have hard-ons for that little baby Yoda, and we need to talk about it.
You put it.
We have hard-ons for babies. That's what I said. I'm gonna stick to it. But before we talk about those Woodsons for younglings, we're gonna talk housekeeping with Ian Sharpley.
I can't compete with anything that you just said there, so I'm going to try to get through this really quickly. McSauce.com, our webcomics, this podcast, you can check it out there. You can also listen to us on any of the podcasting places that you find podcast, be it Apple Podcast, Stitcher Radio, Podomatic. You can also listen to us on Spotify. If you want to as well, you can go to odyssey1.com, and we have a internet radio station there. You can check us out on at tonight, or at least on Monday nights at 1 a.m. and Thursdays at 1:30 in the morning. For
so
you,
stay up late.
Stay up late, podcasters, and check out.
We're going to be up. You may as well be up, too.
We'll keep you up. Don't worry. We'll keep you company. You can also check out some of our merchandise on TeePublic. If you go to TeePublic and type in McSauce, you will be taken to Paul McGinty Design, where we have some of our wares there. Click on his actual shop, so it will show you all the different options for all the different t-shirts. We have the traditional three-headed McSauce podcast t-shirt. We have a Theater Justice t-shirt. At Thanksgiving, my dad was wearing the Theater Justice t-shirt.
He has one?
He does. There are two people in my family. My lovely wife also has a Theater Justice t-shirt, and my dad has a Theater Justice t-shirt. So
I just feel like Tracy's Theater Justice shirt should be a picture of her, like
murdering
her
people,
arms crossed, like ready to murder somebody if they act out.
We went to the theater the other day, and I was like, just zip that up. We don't want to make a scene here. We know you're going to kill people. So, yes, shout-outs to my dad for getting the Theater Justice t-shirt. And shout-outs to my wife, too, even though she doesn't listen to this shit.
Does your dad listen?
Yeah, he does.
Hey, Mr. Sharpley.
See? There you go. So, yeah, check us out on TeePublic and all of the regular podcast places.
Regular.
We're very regular. If you see a episode that's up and there's something wrong with it, reach out to your local McSauce representative and we will fix it. That's all I got.
So we're coming off Thanksgiving weekend, which is Thursday through Sunday. I assume we all had some time off, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Right.
Some Matt, maybe more than others, but yeah.
Did you have time off?
I had some time off.
Was it just Thanksgiving Day or did you have...
I was off on Thursday and Friday, and I worked Saturday.
Matt does work two jobs. He's dedicated to the craft of
that's exactly
working.
It. I just love work so much.
He loves it. He loves it.
Ian, did you have a long weekend?
I did. I took some vacation, so I had four consecutive days off.
And you know what? You deserved it.
I don't know if I deserved it, but I took it anyway. So, yeah, I took a lot of time off. I watched some football. I watched some television that I'm sure we'll be talking about in a little bit here.
I had the weekend off. I had Thursday through Sunday. I had a lot of time to read. I read some comics. I finished Cujo, which felt really good.
Ah, nice Thanksgiving classic.
Yeah.
I may, you know what, asshole? I may start reading it every Thanksgiving because it was, it's...
Does it have traveling in it, for Christ's sake?
It doesn't. It's oh, actually boy. About a car that gets stuck for 3 days in a driveway.
So it's, so it's absolutely the opposite of traveling.
It's the anti-Thanksgiving
That's right.
book.
What's on the opposite side of Thanksgiving? The 4th of July?
Maybe.
I don't know. So Thanksgiving is all about family, food, football, wholesomeness, being inside, essentially,
well,
right?
Cujo takes place in July, and like in the middle of July when it's really hot, and you know those Maine summers, those Castle Rock summers, are just brutal.
Yeah, I associate July and 4th of July, the holiday, with like debauchery and friends and late nights. So I guess that would be the opposite of Thanksgiving.
Cujo's really cool. I read it before. It's not long. What'd you say?
Cool Joe.
Cool Joe. It's very, very cool, Joe. It's a short book. It's not like It, where it's a fucking billion pages, or The Stand, which is a billion pages.
I would hope it's only a few pages, being that it takes place in a car in a driveway.
I haven't read it in a while, but there's the main story, which is a mother and her son are trapped in a car with a rabid dog trying to get at them.
I never read Cujo or saw the movie. He's not possessed by Satan.
No,
he's just a rabid dog.
There's nothing supernatural or anything about this. It's just awful circumstances that lead to this situation. But there's a lot of story surrounding Donna and Tad stuck in this car that kind of everything leads to like how this happens. Like,
well,
how
Tad needed to be
happens.
Killed because Tad's
name is Tad.
Terrible name.
The Tatter. Yeah.
Maybe she should have thrown him out the window, and as Cujo is mauling him, she could run to safety.
Yeah, as Cujo was putting his little like bib in to have dinner.
Thanksgiving dinner.
I feel like the older I get, and like, you know, I will say this, knowing that, you know, you two can have your way with this comment however you want. But the older I get, because
it's likely stupid. So
the
go
more,
ahead.
I'm
no,
like
it's not. It's
right
not
now.
Stupid. You guys are gonna be like, well, no fucking duh. The older I get, the more locked into
how dangerous that dog was.
My OCD peculiarities are.
Yes.
You're starting to pick up on this,
right? I feel like they've always been there, but now I feel like certain aspects of it have gotten more intense. So what's really satisfying about reading Cujo is Stephen King really went to the trouble of troubleshooting all of the story. Because like when you initially hear the plot of, you know, woman and his son are stuck in a car and there's a dog outside, like immediately you're like, well, do this to like try this. There's all these reasons to get out of this situation, but the story really covers all of the bases of why they can't get out of this situation, and it all works really. It's this intricate puzzle that all comes together.
This is a mystery. I'm gonna have to read this book.
What does
now.
This have to do with your OCD?
Because I will watch shows or movies now, and I'll see a situation, and immediately I'm like, just fucking do this. Like I have a harder time with what the fuck is it called? Sense of suspending disbelief with certain things. But Cujo doesn't ask you to do that. Like, this book takes all of the questioning out for you. It explains why this isn't happening, why this isn't happening. Like, it's a very pragmatic plot as to how all of this unfolds, and that it's very satisfying to me. It's very entertaining. Like, I forgot how much the story out, how much I like the story outside of Donna and the old Tatter stuck in the car is entertaining.
Fucking Tad.
So
I read hate that kid.
I read Cujo over Thanksgiving and it was very enjoyable. Did you guys read anything? Did you watch anything? Matt, I think we both watched something. Not together.
No. You saw the Mr. Rogers movie.
I did. I think.
Well, air bubble.
It's getting all
stuck in your throat. I think we did.
I hope that picked up. We both saw It's a Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. Ian, you didn't see It's a Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood.
I didn't.
Did you have any desire?
I do, but I generally go and would like to watch movies with my wife. So she was unavailable this weekend, so I was not at the movie theater. But the two of you were able to go and do that.
So you will allow.
I like to go to the movies with the woman that I married.
You will
it's
allow
fun.
Television infidelity. But movie infidelity is where you draw the line.
Oh, no. I've absolutely been a movie cheat. I was a movie cheat with Captain Marvel. I came here with the stink of Captain Marvel still on my jeans whenever I walked in. Like,
you saw it right before the podcast.
You know, just the fans out there and us here, we're just lucky. You know, she doesn't listen to this shit. So she doesn't know how despicable I am with my media infidelity. But there are certain things. If I knew that we were going to have an in-depth review of that film, then maybe I would have taken the time to watch it. There are certain things. If she is unavailable to see a Star Wars movie, which she normally is available for, but if she wasn't, man, I'm there. You know, I'm ready for action.
Open for business.
Right? Yeah. There are certain things that I go to the theaters by myself to watch, but Mr. Rogers does not qualify for that because I know for a fact that she wants to see it, so I'd like to see it with her.
Yeah, Mr. Rogers was not must-see viewing. If I didn't have the option to, like, go with my mom, then I wouldn't have gone. Like, Mr. Rogers is not something you need to see on the big screen. I would have been, like, happy seeing this on, like, TBS in 3 years.
Because TBS is going to get the rights for the...
In three years.
Yeah.
What they're saying.
But that is, you know, what's funny is the way that our viewing habits have changed. Honestly, there are a lot of movies where I see the trailer and I'm like, that looks really cool. But I don't know if I have the time to go to the theater to see this movie, or if it's just like, and they don't really make comedies all like that for major blockbuster films, not like back in the day. So if it's something that's a little bit more just low stakes or doesn't have the visual impact, then I'm likely going to wait until it comes out on home theater. My home theater.
Yeah, I feel the same way about specific movies at this point. Like Star Wars, Endgame. You know, these are movies that I think warrant going to the theater.
Mm-hmm.
It's a Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. Not so much. Matt, I know you saw Knives Out. I didn't see Knives Out, but I feel like Knives Out can probably be seen on my TV, and I'm going to get just as much out of it as I would go into the theater. So, yeah, like, I think my movie viewing is just, it's a little more dictated these days by, like, do I need to see this on the big screen? Like, I'll see it on the big screen if it's something I really want to see. I really want to get out there that weekend. Like, Ready or Not, I really wanted to see.
Yeah,
so I made sure I got to the theater for that.
Like, what do you think that is about our viewing habits that we no longer have? Like, because also there is no real middle class of theater. Like, the movies that would be, you know, your $50 million, your $20 million hits that make a lot of money but didn't cost a lot of money, those don't make it to the theaters anymore. Those are saved for television or some kind of streaming service or something like that. Is it because we see the inner workings of that, that we as consumers, like especially us that are very media savvy, we know like, well, that's something that I'm just going to save and I'm just going to watch it on my TV?
I would expect Matt to have a much different answer than the two of us, because Matt is a theaterphile.
He touches theaters inappropriately.
I like to, right, yeah.
You really like getting in there.
I like to file theaters. I always felt theaters have very sharp edges that I like to smooth out a little bit.
You like to get it all buttery.
That's right, and then blow that file dust off.
The NC-17 podcast because of that blow.
Do you think, so like Matt, you are theaterphile. You love going to the movies. Has your theater viewing changed at all, or like do you just like going? Like I said, like I don't think Knives Out or A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood warrant a theater viewing. Do you think that way?
I get why you would suggest that, because the visual spectacle of it there's not as much eye candy, right? Like as there is in a Avengers movie or Star Wars. I think the problem is, as we get a little bit older, at least as I get a little bit older, and as more and more movies like Avengers and Star Wars come out, they lose their impact, I think, and they don't feel as special. And I think that there's just so many of those kinds of movies that the truly great ones are kind of few and far between. So it's like in the 80s, there were so many like sci-fi movies, but there really weren't that many great ones that have really kind of withstood the test of time. And now I just like good movies, and that's what I want to go see in the theater. I like the theater experience because I like going. I like sort of going to a place to watch a movie with no interruptions and total dedication to the movie that you're watching, not, you know, watching it and then pausing it until later on the day or whatever. No, I want to like experience this thing kind of the way it was meant to be experienced. I like the smell of the movie theater. I just like the whole vibe.
I like all that stuff too, Matt. I still go to the theater an awful lot. I've probably gone to the movies in November here? I think I've probably gone to the
theater. I believe we're in December, Ian.
Have you not
started your advent calendar?
I haven't. No. Oh, shit. That's right.
Get with the program, buddy.
It is. You know what? And I also ignored our host earlier today whenever he said it was December 2nd. I probably have gone to the theater, I don't know, 14 times this year.
That's
somewhere around
odd
there.
That you would have that number figured out. Have you been sitting here all this time counting the movies on your fingers and toes?
I went to go do that on IMDb, but I failed. So I just guessed. I am guessing that it's been 14 times. But I've definitely gone. I think it's been that high of a total. But still, even with that high of a total, there are certain movies that I just, you know, I'm not going to go see. And I do love that experience. The one thing that does drop off for me, Matt, you mentioned the way that it was intended to be seen. Mm-hmm. I guess I get that.
You don't give a fuck.
I guess I get that, but I want to watch the movie how I want to watch it, or I want to watch the piece of media how I want to watch it. And sometimes it does involve breaks. I started over the holiday, I started watching The Irishman from Martin Scorsese on mm-hmm. Netflix, and I'm sure it's been shown.
Much better to break up into 10 parts.
It's like three
is
and a
like
half
hours?
Fucking hours, and I'm still not done with it. It's a
oh, I'm sorry, Ian.
Big
wait,
boy sandwich.
Let's rewind for a second. How many consecutive days off from work did you have?
He's a busy man.
Couldn't
There's
spare
a lot
the
of fucking jerking
days.
Off to get done.
4 days. 4 days. I mean, I had to. How many times did you interrupt your viewing to? Wait, ask this.
To take a nap? Definitely. I took a nap. I was watching.
Riveting.
And I was like,
riveting film. Riveting cinema. It's so good. It's putting
all right,
me
asshole.
To sleep.
I started watching it yesterday, and then the Steeler game came on. I started watching the Steeler game, and then I watched some more football. That's where that is where the folly happened. I started watching it too late in the weekend. This is on me. It's my fault.
And what's The Irishman about? Because I feel like
it's gangster
I've seen...
shit. You would not like it.
Is that what it is? Yeah. It's just Irish mob stuff?
Yeah.
It's De Niro, Pacino.
It's Irishman.
Aren't they with
in Italians? The middle of Italians. Yeah. The Irishman, essentially, from what I'm picking up, is...
Who's The Irishman?
It's actually JFK is The Irishman. But De Niro also is Irish, but that's not who they're talking about.
But he's a...
In the movie. I know.
I don't buy him as Irish for one second.
He was part Irish
in... Robert McDeniro.
De Niro was part Irish
in... Is Joe Pesci in that too?
Yeah, Joe Pesci's sort of like his mentor, kind of, that guides him through the mob in the 50s and 60s. So, it's a cool movie. Only halfway through, but pretty cool so far. But that's how I want to fucking watch it. That's how I want to watch it. That's how I want to watch the media that I consume. On my terms, Matt, you want to watch stuff on your terms too, right?
I do.
And but Matt's terms usually align with Scorsese's terms.
Well,
how it's supposed to be watched.
Not to jump too far into Mando land, but you want to watch all the Mandalorian all at once, but that's not how they want you to watch it.
Well, we're talking about movies. We're not talking about shows.
You can now make a movie into a show if you want.
Yeah, I understand that, Ian, but you're not going to the movie theater to watch one half of The Irishman and then be like, I'll come back on Thursday and watch the second half.
But right, it's so long, you could get a full feature-length product from one half of The Irishman.
There you go.
That's true.
For Irishman Part 2.
And part of the reason why that...
Irisher.
The search for more gold.
Irish. Yeah.
Still Irish.
Yeah. The reason why that movie can even be made is because a company like Netflix is like, make it as fucking long as you want. Who could ever care? We're just going to put it on and people like Ian Sharpley are going to watch it like it's a fucking TV show.
Right, or a podcast where you could just, like, let's say our podcast is more than an hour long. You could break it up into multiple parts.
Matt, what is the number one objection to our podcast?
That Paul's on it. That was a joke. That was a joke.
That's fine.
Yeah, you have to admit that was funny.
What's the second objection?
The audience is probably that I'm on it.
What's the third one?
I'm still on it.
All right, here, I'm going to go through the list. All the way down at number six is that it's too long.
That's what she said.
But they can choose how they want to interact with it, just like TV shows, just like Irish movies. You can choose how you want to interact
with yourself.
It. Is that not my word? Irish?
Irish
what
movies.
The fuck?
So, Matt, what made you see It's a Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood in the theater?
I really wanted to see it. I mean, I was very interested to see that movie. I anticipated it would have good acting.
Tom Hanks, America's Dad.
I'm interested in the source material. Yeah, I mean, like the Pittsburgh references, obviously. And while the movie wasn't what I was necessarily expecting, I was still pleased, and I enjoyed the movie.
The movie was a little different, right?
I would say so. Yeah.
Yeah. It was a little weird. It got a little meta at points,
Does Fred Rogers break the fourth wall?
Do you want me to spoil it for you?
Yeah, I kind of don't care.
He does.
Does he really? That's fucked up.
I
mean, wait, time out. That's what he does, though. So,
yeah, his show is predicated on breaking fourth wall.
He was the original Deadpool.
Yeah, like it all makes sense. It all fits. But there were some conceits to the storytelling that I didn't see coming. Like I thought it would have been more about Mr. Rogers than it was. What was his name?
The guy from The Americans.
Right. Matthew Reese was the actor. I can't. Vogel. Someone Vogel. Julian Vogel? Jillian?
No.
Reporter A.
Reporter Mr. Vogel. Yeah, but like I like that story because you can't tell like a three-part story with Mr. Rogers without getting into some kind of nitty gritty, but
a three part? You could just break it up, come back at various times throughout the week.
That's how we watch movies.
I meant
in
three act
2019.
Story. I meant three act story with Mr. Rogers because Mr. Rogers is like he's just good. Like you're not gonna like the middle act of his story is not gonna be here's where we found him shooting heroin down in Southside. That's not gonna be part of the Mr. Rogers story.
And isn't that what the movie is about? Is this reporter trying to find, like, this guy can't be this good, right?
Right. Sort of. Yeah, but it's more about what Fred Rogers helps him find in himself and his own family and experiences. But they make some interesting, like, storytelling choices, like breaking the fourth wall and some other stuff that I didn't see coming, but I thought were kind of cool. They were had a couple nice comedic beats to them, and it really kept a lot of heart and sentimentality. This is not my kind of movie. I went because I thought Mom would have liked it. I never would have seen this in the theater if going with my mom wasn't an option.
So you did something for somebody else.
I did.
That and seems I, like in the spirit of Mr. Rogers.
Matthew Reese was so fucking good. He was so good in this goddamn movie. I think he played...
So good, I can't even remember his name.
I remember his name. I remember the actor's name. I remember the character's last name. But it's supposedly close enough. It's definitely Vogel. Don't fucking test me. But he played a great...
Your mind is a steel trap, dude. So
he played... like a great counterpoint to Tom Hanks, Fred Rogers, who's always calm and measured and, you know, seems to have all the right answers. And, you know, Matthew Reese is always like questioning himself. He's like struggling. He's dealing with some family issues. I liked it. Matt, what was your favorite part about it?
Well, I wanted to comment on the acting. You had mentioned that the main character was excellent, and I agree. I think everybody was. It was so well acted that you almost lost sight of the fact that you were watching a movie. It just felt just like real. It felt totally real and not like there was acting going on. It just felt like people were living life and it was being captured on film. I think truly everybody that was on screen in that movie was just perfect. It was a wonderfully acted movie. What was my favorite part? I don't know. I thought the part when the main character, whatever his name is, Mr. Vogel,
Lloyd Vogel.
Lloyd.
I knew it was an L. I was going to say Leon, but I knew it wasn't Leon. When Lloyd is sitting on the park bench with his wife and he finally has his moment of vulnerability with her and he starts to break down a little bit because it was kind of a long time coming in the movie. I thought that was a pretty powerful moment. Even though Fred Rogers wasn't in that scene, his effect was like all over it. So I thought that was a pretty cool moment. Can I talk about the ending? I don't feel like it's a big spoiler, but I thought the ending went out on a very peculiar note, so to speak, Paul.
Talking about the piano playing?
Yes.
I did too.
And I don't know if I understand exactly why that movie chose to end that way.
Yeah, I didn't understand that either. Like, 'cause leading up to that point, and I guess if you haven't seen It's a Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, like, tune out for the next 10 to 20 seconds. So
maybe longer,
maybe longer. Early on in the movie, Lloyd's asking Mr. Rogers, like, how do you get this frustration? How do you get anger out? Certainly you're a complex person. You're not just nice all the time. How do you get this anger out? And, you know, Mr. Rogers says a bunch of, you know, different ways. And one of the ways is, like, you know, sometimes you just want to, like, bang on the lower end of the piano. You just want to, like, bong, 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 and just, like, hit the low end of the piano keys to, like, just get this anger out. So as the movie ends, he's playing piano as the lights are coming down around the set, and he's on the Mr. Rogers.
The filming for the show had just ended for the day. All the lights are going out, and you're left with a silhouette of him sitting at a piano playing playing the piano as he did, right?
And as he's playing it, I was like, oh, he's going to bang on these keys. And then I was like, no, like, he's not, because, like, in my brain, I was like, well, if he bangs on these keys, like, that's from what we know, like, that's a tip of the hat to, oh, something's wrong. Like, he's mad about something. But, like, I didn't think that was what they were putting forward with Mr. Rogers. But sure enough, bangs on these fucking keys at the very end. And I'm like, what is that trying to say?
I don't know.
Is he mad about Lloyd's dad passing, or like this,
or that his interactions with Lloyd are finished, because he seems to have made an impact and that's it, that's all he was good for. I don't know.
It seemed a weird, it did seem a weird note to end on, considering that we spent the whole movie keeping Mr. Rogers, like, in the light the entire time. Like, we didn't really dip into any of his darkness. Certainly he's a three-dimensional person. He has, even Mr. Rogers has, you know, some bad days, some bad moments. But, like, I thought, since we kept it on the bright side the entire time, to make that final dip at the very end was a weird choice.
Agreed. Paul, what would you rate Mr. Rogers on a 10-point scale?
I would give it, I'd give it a 9. I thought it was really well done. I thought it was a really good movie. It's not my style of movie. I never see just straight dramas. Like, I need some kind of supernatural, spaceships, something. Like, I need comedy.
What a baby.
Yeah, like, just straight up, I never see straight up dramas, but I thought this was really well done. Matt, I agree with you that all the acting was, like, pitch perfect.
It was sublime.
Through the entire movie. Everything felt very, very real. Even the way, like, I like that we didn't really get anything from Mr. Rogers' perspective. We get everything from the characters around him.
Right.
I think that helped keep the legend of Mr. Rogers alive. Like, I wouldn't want to see, like,
the gritty depiction.
Yeah,
of
I don't want to see, who did Joker?
Joaquin Phoenix.
No,
Todd Phillips.
Say, I don't want to see Todd Phillips Rogers. Like, I love the way they did it, and, you know, being from Pittsburgh, seeing all the Pittsburgh nods. You know, at one point they're eating at Mandarin Gourmet downtown. Like, as soon as I saw that fucking panda logo, I came in my pants. I was like, fuck yeah. I know where that is. It was neat. Like, all the storytelling conceits that they made were really cool. So I would absolutely, I give it a 9. I would recommend seeing it. And if you're from Pittsburgh, like, a lot of those just sentimental touchstones are going to bring it home a little more. Matt.
Yeah, I would I would agree with just about everything you said. I'm going to give it an 8. I don't know why. I'm not giving it a 9. Maybe because it just threw me a little bit for what it ended up being, and maybe I did want just a little more Mr. Rogers out of it and less Lloyd Vogel. Because while Lloyd became, I think, a redeemed man when it was all kind of said and done, I still think he was a bit of an unlikable kind of guy. And I don't know, maybe if I'm going to watch a movie about an uplifting subject, I'd rather the main character be Mr. Rogers instead of Lloyd Vogel. But Paul, everything you said is right on. One little note, I really enjoyed the transition scene to scene, how they used like model sets, just like in the beginning of Mr. Rogers, to represent going from like Pittsburgh to New York and everything. And all the models were like on tracks and stuff. It was kind of cool.
Yeah, it was very cool.
It was a nice touch.
Did either of you guys watch last year's Won't You Be My Neighbor, which was a documentary about Mr.
No,
Rogers?
But I really want to.
A woman that I work with, her father was one of the cameramen on Mr. Rogers, so she went to the premiere with some of the people that made the film, and just said that it was a real special moment for her. And I think it's cool that we live in a city that does have some connection to all of this stuff that's happening here with a little bit of a Mr. Rogers revival, or
yeah, a little
kind
bit
of getting his name and his legacy out there to more of the country. If they did know,
well, I think he's. I mean, yeah, I suppose
it's hard to tell since we're sort of insulated and we're Pittsburghers.
Yeah, you know? I still think his legend is well known.
Yeah,
just not amongst like probably millennials. Honestly,
yeah.
I don't think that they understand who he was and what he did. So it's probably good that it's, they're being educated on that now, but, I think he might even be, he might be more of just a national hero rather than a, international treasure. Ian, I also saw the movie, Knives Out. I saw that this weekend. I saw Mr. Rogers the weekend before. Mm-hmm. Knives Out is, the newest movie, written and directed by the guy that ruined Star Wars, Rian Johnson.
Oh, he did Looper, right?
He did Looper.
I liked Looper.
He also did The Last Jedi. He wrote and directed that.
Oh, I did not like that.
You didn't like that one?
Now, he did other things that I like, I think, too. Looper's up there, though.
Is Knives Out something that interests you?
It would be something that I might watch not on the big screen.
Why? Is it because, like, if it was directed by David Fincher, would that be something you'd want to see?
I'm not that vindictive, Matt. It just isn't. It just doesn't seem like the kind of movie that in my busy, busy December schedule that I'm going to be able to make time to go see.
Totally acceptable.
I don't hold grudges like that, man. Like, yeah, he made my least favorite Star Wars movie of all time. I will still probably watch his movies if he comes out with something else. Mm-hmm.
He did, though. He did ruin Star Wars for you.
You know what? I will be honest. He did change the way that not only that I interact with Star Wars, but I interact with all media. I don't think that that's necessarily a bad thing. Perhaps he shined a light on maybe a more intense and tunnel vision way that I interact with things. And I,
what do you mean by that? What does that mean?
I think that maybe I take some, especially since I've done a podcast where we talk about movies, pop culture, television for 300 episodes. Maybe I take some of the stuff a little bit too seriously. And I think that upon my reflection of how I felt about The Last Jedi and how visceral my feelings were on a movie. It was a movie about characters that are fictional, and I think I was a little bit too upset about it, and too invested and intertwined into what happened to these fictional characters. I have since, in the 2 years that it has been since that movie came out, I think I've taken a substantial step back and reevaluated the way that I interact with media. I thank Rian Johnson.
I've heard people refer to Star Wars a lot of the time because obviously Star Wars gets a reaction out of people unlike almost any other film property. And I hear that a lot. Oh, it's just a movie. It's just a movie. But it's not. Not to us. I mean, maybe it is to you now, but...
Well, it wasn't. And then I feel that I was too wrapped up in it.
Too invested.
It made me react to people and things in a way that I didn't really think that was becoming of myself. So I... And, like, it's funny. Like, I do this show, and I act like an idiot
Of the time. All of the life you've lived, The Last Jedi, is when you were like, oh, now I don't like this person.
No. It's just a facet of my personality that I think that I tried to take a step back because it was a little bit too intense.
Ian, I like every facet of your personality.
Well, that is fantastic. I'm very happy.
Say goodbye to it, because now he is a pacifist and he doesn't give a shit.
I mean...
Now he is the last Jedi Luke Skywalker.
Hey, assholes. I've been... I've been acting this way for 2 years now, so... Do you think it's drastically different?
Yes.
No. Do you, Matt?
No. Okay.
But
no, I think you're properly passionate about things. But yeah, I feel the same way. Like,
you do have some proper passion there.
There's definitely, I definitely do interact and react to things differently now.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I think Last Jedi really cut a lot of the heat out of me. Like, there's like a lot of shit that comes out now, and I'm like, whatever. Like, what the fuck does it matter?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like, and that's not to say, this is not to say anything bad about Rian Johnson's movie making. It has something to do with me as an individual and the way that I was reacting to things and how invested I was, and that is it. So I think that in my disappointment in the film that Rian Johnson put out there, it made me a better person, Matt.
Jesus Christ.
I mean, do you want a slapstick take of how I actually feel about The Last Jedi, or do you want the real version, which I just gave you?
No, but I don't think that's even the real version. I feel like...
Why do you feel like that's not the real version?
Because you're saying this is about me.
And it was about me. It was how I was acting. It was the thing that was brought out of me because of... how I was upset with how a fucking movie was. And I saw it in myself, and I saw it in other people, and it was ugly.
Are you saying that you just refuse to allow yourself to get wrapped up too much in entertainment? To like have an emotional
To the extent that I was upset about what happened in The Last Jedi. Yes. Uh-huh. Absolutely. And it's not to say, like, this doesn't excuse, like, my feeling. Like, I still feel the same way about The Last Jedi.
Which is what? To clarify for the listeners.
To clarify for the listeners, if you can go back and there are 4 hours of me ranting and raving, the previous Ian Sharpley, ranting and raving about how I didn't like it. I thought it was a betrayal of the character, Luke Skywalker in particular.
It was 4 hours of Ian Sharpley... foregoing the rest of his training and just rushing off in a rage to fight Rian Johnson and getting beat on Bespin. But now Ian's not even here right now. He's projecting his Force ghost from his house to this
Rian
podcast.
Johnson didn't destroy Star Wars. Ian Sharpley destroyed Star Wars he even realized he did it.
Rian Johnson definitely destroyed Star Wars.
Yeah, man, I don't feel the same about Star Wars anymore. And it was it was based on a film that Rian Johnson made, and you like whatever, however you feel about it is fine, but I don't feel the same about it anymore, and I don't think I ever will. And like, I still like Star Wars stuff. We're about to have fucking Mando corner in a little bit. I like that.
Mando minute.
I fucking love it. It's great. I have fun times on Friday nights with Mando corner, but I don't feel the same about Star Wars anymore.
Well, Rian Johnson didn't make another Star Wars. He made a new movie called Knives Out. Paul, it's a murder mystery. You don't see too many murder mysteries in theaters anymore. You know,
they did it all with Clue.
They
peaked with Clue.
They beat the system. They figured it out. No one needed to make another murder mystery.
Well, I mean, you don't see many Westerns anymore. Westerns are, you know, except pretty cool movies. And
what we'll cover in the Mando Minute.
The Mando Outpost.
But,
Frontier Doe?
I think that Rian Johnson...
Prairie Doe.
...did a pretty good job with Knives Out. It was pretty good.
I think Knives Out looks really cool. I really want to see it.
It's in that Ready or Not territory for me. Like, it looks like a similar movie that I'm like, it looks kind of cool, but I'll eventually wait for it.
It's nothing like it.
Ready or Not's a they both have horror mansions. Movie. Knives Out's a murder mystery.
Same thing.
Same thing, except from apparently, the trailers and Ready or Not, we know who the murderers are.
Apparently, The Last Jedi made Ian retarded as well.
Yeah, like I want to see Knives Out. I don't want you to like talk too much about it or spoil it because it's a movie that I really do.
No, I want
to see, and I
want to say a few
things
about it, but it's not spoiler territory at all. I think that Daniel Craig, who played the main inspector of you know trying to figure out and solve the mystery, is you know he's like the 21st century of Sherlock Holmes.
He's like the Hugo Poirot. What
is it?
The guy from the...
How do you say his first name?
Hugo?
I don't think it's Hugo.
What is it?
Hercule.
Hercule Poirot.
Hercule
That's
Poirot.
Right. That's right. Man, I am fucking garbage at first names tonight.
Hercule Poirot.
Yeah, first name blind spot. Like, only first name, so... That last name. Pure nailed it. Hugo, it's...
The movie did, at least from what I remember from the previews, it didn't do a good job of establishing who maybe your main character is, which I thought was...
Because it's an ensemble kind of deal, right? Or no?
It is, but I don't even remember seeing the main character in the trailer, so whatever.
I'm excited.
It is, it's a clever movie. I think it's well written. It's directed.
Did
Rian
Johnson write this as well?
He did. I feel like stylistically, like I'm trying to look for parallels because everybody kind of unanimously says that The Last Jedi is a beautiful looking movie. It's just the content that people have issues with. And I'm trying to, like, see similarities because I've watched The Last Jedi a handful of times now, and I really didn't. I thought it looked good, but it didn't look familiar, if that makes sense. I wasn't detecting a Rian Johnson style exactly. And granted, you know, that is Star Wars, and it's going to be different. But I did like it, and it was absolutely a throwback. And I'm like, I'll tell you what. Hey, Hollywood, bring more mysteries because this was pretty interesting and it was kind of fun to try to figure out and go along for the ride.
Yeah, I don't like what Rian Johnson did with The Last Jedi, but I think if he's doing a hit, if he's doing original material, if he's doing material I don't really give a shit about, then
when you say original material, I see Rian Johnson getting up on stage like he's a stand-up comedian. And, like he's just like trying, working out, stretching out.
Have you seen Rian Johnson try to tell jokes like in Star Wars? Not funny.
Yikes.
So, Paul, it's interesting that you say that because back when it was announced that Rian Johnson was going to make more Star Wars movies. And I think we were talking about, like, well, what are you more excited for? Like, the Benioff and Weiss Star Wars or the Rian Johnson Star Wars? And I said, I'm probably looking more forward to the Rian Johnson Star Wars because I think he'll actually do a fairly good job with his own story and without, like, kind of crapping on what has come before him. You know, he definitely seems like the kind of guy that needs to put his stamp on stuff. Like, I detect a pretty significant ego with this guy, and he needs it to be his in some capacity.
Really? And you say that about a guy who submarined a trilogy in the middle. Like, oh, let's
here
end
we
this
go. Here we go.
An ego.
I was wondering where this guy went.
Done. There, good luck, JJ. You motherfucker.
I know
he does seem like somebody that wants to do his own thing.
You know, probably nobody hates Rian Johnson more than JJ Abrams. He's probably like, you motherfucker. What did you leave me with?
No way. JJ loves him because JJ gets to do again what he's most comfortable with. Beginnings.
Yeah, right. Start over.
He's like, you mean I get to start
I
again?
Start over again. I don't have to finish. I get to start
over.
In the
third act, I can start?
In the fucking middle.
This is great.
At the end of The Rise of Skywalker, there's going to be a to be continued sign, and they'll be like, gotcha.
It's going to have a psych stamped on it.
To be continued on Disney Plus 2021.
Who's directing it? Rian Johnson. What if it's just this vicious cycle of J.J. Abrams starts a movie, Rian Johnson comes in and tries to end it, and then J.J. comes back to start it over? I heard that The Rise of Skywalker is going to be 2 hours and 20 minutes. I expected this
movie...
I can't
wait to leave halfway through.
Right, come back the next day. I expected this movie to have to be like at least 3 hours long because there are so many things that need to start and obviously be resolved. I do not envy J.J. Abrams for having to come in after The Last Jedi. What the hell? But anyway, I want to say Knives Out was actually pretty good, and I really enjoyed it. Seeing it in the theater, it felt very much like, I know we were talking about this last episode, like, what is a Thanksgiving movie? And I kind of attributed Thanksgiving movies as movies that kind of come out around that time of year. And this just kind of felt like to me that it fit the mold.
Not traveling specifically. You're not moving from place to place.
No, you're moving from theory to theory, maybe.
Ah, I see. Does that qualify as a Thanksgiving movie?
That wasn't my dumbass criteria, let me just say. Very quickly, Paul, I'll give you a quick Knives Out 10-point scale. 10-point score. I'm going to give it a solid 8.
Snowman.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
Don't
very
ask
nice.
Me what was better, Mr. Rogers or Knives Out. They were both very entertaining in their own right.
Knives Out, for what it was, looks like it made a lot of money. 70 million worldwide. That's a lot for a thriller drama.
It looked interesting. A lot of star power that probably helped. So, I'd like to check it out. So, now we're going to dip into the Mando Minute, which is probably going to be 15 to 20 minutes to 45 minutes.
That's how minutes go on Mandalorian
Talk. To 2 hours and 20 minutes.
Right. And if you're not watching The Mandalorian, you don't care. You can just tune this podcast off right now. But for the duration of season one of The Mandalorian, this is, I assume, how we're going to finish the rest of the episodes besides like the Rise of Skywalker one, which may or may not be a 4-hour episode. Buckle up, folks. But right
now, I can't
now,
imagine us doing 4 hours.
We're gonna be like, okay, we're gonna do the Rise of Skywalker review, and Ian's gonna be like, well, I gotta still watch the second half.
I can't wait to get up in the middle of our viewing and be like, all right, guys, peace.
But right now we're going to talk about Mandalorian Chapter 4. The fuck is the episode called?
I think it's called the filler episode.
You don't think episode 2 was the filler episode?
Sanctuary.
Sanctuary, yes.
Ah, oh, there it is.
You think this was more filler than episode 2?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
Matt, lead us off, man. You said before we were recording that you had some thoughts about episode 4.
You want me to get right into it?
Yeah, tell
us your
thoughts.
I thought this episode sucked.
Is it because you just have a general dislike of indigenous people?
Yes. There were several
That'll
things.
Do it for us
there
tonight.
There were several things I didn't like about this episode, but the dominant thought that I had was it felt very TV to me. I thought the first three look, going into The Mandalorian, I was like, ah, man, you know, like, I wish this was going to be a movie. I'm worried about Star Wars television, and
you got it.
And then we get the first three episodes, and it hooked me, and I was like, this doesn't feel like TV. This feels pretty much like a movie. I am emotionally invested. I'm really, really enjoying this, outside of a few little nitpicky things. Well, the music isn't nitpicky, but whatever.
I'll tell you what, man. I kind of like the opening theme a little bit now.
It's growing on me. But
yeah,
the music throughout.
It. Yeah. Yeah.
And especially when they start hitting those notes like that. Like, that just sounds like Rocky shit. But the show has been a pleasant surprise, and it doesn't feel like television to me. It feels like it's just an extended movie. This episode felt like it belonged on CW.
Matt, I talked to a couple buddies on Sunday, and we greet each other with, did you watch episode 4? And yeah, and they were
You guys don't say this is the way?
No. And they were like, it felt like a Xena episode, right?
Xena, yep.
And I was like, holy shit. I was like, I've never watched a Xena episode, but I know enough of it that I was like, yeah, this did kind of have that, like, just other
Warrior princess vibe.
This otherworldly, you know, like medieval type vibe to it.
It felt really low budget.
I wasn't against it, but I understand the feel, the tone, the Xena-ness. I am just on board for strong warrior female presences. So, Matt, however,
I don't think that
the patriarchy represented over here.
I don't think that's what I'll defend Matt.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
You know, I don't think that's his point either.
It really did have a Xena feel. Like, it felt really low budget, and which was a shift from the first three episodes, which felt high budget. They felt like these things can stand with the Star Wars films. And then suddenly we get this, and it's like, oh, this is what I feared Star Wars on TV would feel like, and I don't like it at all. And not only that, this is the very definition of a filler episode. When I say a filler episode, if the status quo is the same at the end of the show as it was at the beginning of the show, then there was no point to it. And that's exactly what this was. Well, everything was the same by the end of it. You get a little character development in there, but honestly, the more character development you get with this Mandalorian character, the less interesting he is to me. I think that the more mysterious he is, and granted, it's inevitable that he's going to become less mysterious as we go, just because we're going to learn more as we go, but you don't have to overindulge. You don't have to get too emotional when we're start in the fourth episode of relatively short episodes. If we're already talking about him having a love interest, it just doesn't work for me. There was so much in that episode that I didn't like. I didn't like the orcs. The fact that the orcs are showing up in Lord of the Rings raids are happening.
They were
orcs. They were
orcs. Barada.
Uruk-hai.
They were that dog species from Jabba's palace.
What dog species?
Barada was the action figure's name. They had the dog jowls.
They didn't seem all that...
They looked like orcs to me.
They didn't seem all that out of place to me. What did seem out of place, Matt, correctly, is like the love story. Like, I don't need any of that. Can we have four episodes where he's just like a lone gunman? Is that okay? Like,
you don't think dude wants to fuck?
He does, but dude doesn't even take his helmet off. So I'm not really all that
Everything else comes off, though.
Like, yeah, I mean, he can keep it on. I'm sure that's fine. I'm just not that interested in that part. And I agree, Matt. This was definitely my least favorite episode. And unfortunately, that's a bummer because last week was my least favorite episode. So the quality for keeps dropping and dropping.
That's fair.
However, I'm still pretty pumped about this show. Like, I still enjoy watching it. I'm still excited on Friday nights. I'm like, oh, shit, you know, Mando time. So... It still entertains me.
I was accused by a friend of mine.
Friend of yours?
Yes. I was accused by a friend of mine because I didn't like this, that as an older Star Wars fan, I hate character development. And all I care about are explosions and action and things like that. And I couldn't have possibly disagreed more with that.
Well, because it's not because you're an older Star Wars fan. It's because you're not a fan of television. So they just missed, like, by a little bit.
I think the problem is that some people don't understand that less is more. Not everything has to be explained to death. This is, like, kind of a gripe that I have with anime. Do you guys ever try to watch anime before?
I've tried.
Everything is, like, overly explained through dialogue, and it's like so tedious.
We don't need to.
And
we
sickening.
Don't need to dip into anime for this. We can just look at the prequels. Everything needs an explanation. Everything needs a reason. We can look at Solo. Everything needs an explanation. Everything needs a reason. We don't need R2-D2 and C-3PO do not need to be in the prequels at all. We don't need to know how Han gets his last name or his fucking blaster in Solo. Like, yeah, like, we don't need to know any of this shit. We don't need to know, like, Boba Fett's fucking dad doesn't need to be in the prequels. Matt, I agree. We don't need to know this shit. Less is more. Let the audience make it up, and it's going to be more rich for the individual experience.
Right. I think the stuff that is left to conjecture or your imagination is way more powerful. You create the universe and kind of let your imagination live in it, and it's a way more enriching experience. But I think the millennial fan, sorry, millennials,
man,
if you're listening.
Man, this is the second time that you're coming.
Well,
for their
heads. My one friend is coming a millennial that was coming at me, so I'm making my voice heard here on my podcast. And
does he have a rival podcast? You made it seem like
he
has a
does
rival.
Actually.
Does he?
He does.
A rival youthful podcast.
Something called McMillennial just popped up in my feed.
But I do think that the millennial generation does want more explanation, more things to be revealed, less secrets, that kind of stuff. It's a different audience.
But
that's why everything...
But the prequels weren't made for the millennial generation.
Well, I don't think that...
While
I don't
they
agree.
Were cognizant of needing a certain amount of explanation.
The prequels were made for us.
Yeah, I don't think the prequels over... Like, I think it's okay that Jango Fett was in it because the fans were clamoring for Boba Fett, so it kind of made sense to bring in a Fett-type character. That was more of a fan service kind of thing.
Probably shouldn't have connected directly back to Boba Fett.
And maybe not. Maybe not. But, I mean...
We could have had an equally as cool character if he was just a, you know...
Maybe it should have just been Boba Fett. Boba Fett's an old dude or whatever is under that costume.
Or maybe Boba Fett is just like James Bond. It's just a, you know, there is a new Boba Fett all the time,
yeah,
or something like that.
Well, anyway, This episode makes The Mandalorian way less cool, I can tell you that.
He's still cool, but now we know that he takes his helmet off
when more than his fucking religion allows, right? When he was like, I took my helmet off yesterday.
Any of those bitches could have seen him in that window eating bread with no helmet.
Right.
Like, you just said no one's allowed to see you without a helmet.
I can't take it off.
And he's all willy-nilly.
Right.
Breeze hitting his face.
I can't take it off except for when I eat bread and watch children. I don't understand it, but it's weird.
Mando code. Yeah, all that. Well, that goes back to that write yourself into a corner bullshit where... No, there can only be two Siths, and we can't take our helmets off, even when we fucking
eat
bread.
Four episodes in, we're breaking the rules.
Like, Ian, this is like, I feel the exact same way. Like, Star Wars just seems fraught with weird fucking absolute rules.
Stop
I'm
making
like,
these
why
rules,
the fuck?
Motherfuckers.
Only a Sith.
Why the fuck are your rules, you don't take your helmet off? How
your
are
helmet
you
doesn't
fuck?
Have a fucking
you're
mouthpiece.
Fucking human. You need to put your dick places. You've got needs, and what are, you're gonna keep just
like
the helmet?
Mouth.
Just the helmet.
You got a drink
come,
there.
Come
you can't
on.
Fit a straw in there.
Come on. Like you can't just fuck Mandalorians all the time. There's apparently there's
maybe
not that
you
many
can.
Of
there's
you.
That one.
Like
that
she's
one. Very
why?
Successful.
Like I get it from like a goofy ass. Long time ago on a galaxy far, far away religious thing, but let's be fucking reasonable. It's
2019.
It's not pragmatic to,
it's almost,
to
not
never
all Mandalorians.
Take your fucking helmet off. And same with the fucking Siths. I've had a problem with the Siths since day fucking one. You fucking idiots. Two of you? You guys could rule the fucking everything. You could rule the fucking multiverse. If,
I thought
and they're smart.
The
they're smart. They're not fucking dummies. Palpatine's not a dummy. Maul, in the 30 seconds we see him, not a dummy. Dooku doesn't really seem like a dummy. Get it together, guys. You guys could... The Jedi are fucking dopes. You guys can rule everything. Just stop. Like, there can only be two because one kills the other all the time. Oh, my God. What
stop
terrible,
killing yourselves.
Oh, terrible storytelling.
Well, I mean,
in all this fucking Mandalorian show, oh, we don't fucking take our shit off. Why?
I guess in a way it's
why,
the same
man?
Thing that we, you know, if all the villains ganged up in the Marvel or DC universe, shouldn't they combine their powers and the resources and defeat the heroes? Like,
yeah, but there's ways.
Wouldn't that happen?
But in the Star Wars universe, if you get the Sith at the height of their power... way back in the day when the Jedi are also at the height of their power, then like the Jedi win that battle, and then they're just not allowing the Sith to build themselves back up. But for the Sith themselves to say, nah, we're good with two, that's fucking stupid. That's stupid. So there are ways in the Star Wars universe that naturally plays out. That the Siths, that there just aren't enough Siths. But, like, yeah, in
I
fucking comics, everyone could, all those villains should just lose their minds. But comics are a different medium with different storytelling and everything's a little more fluid. But, like, Star Wars and this Disney stuff, they're like, canon, this happened. Like, we're periods, no ellipses, all periods, all the time. This is absolutely what happened. And, like, you're going to leave me with some fucking nonsense. Like, Palpatine...
Wait, what's an ellipses?
The dot, dot, dot. Leaving, like, an open
yeah.
end
oh,
for
yeah.
more story. But Disney's like, no, canon. This is canon. Absolute canon. And you're going to give me shit like, you know, Palpatine puts this entire plan together. He's a fucking backwater senator. From some weird ass planet.
Is he a backwater senator?
I get the sense
Naboo's
is
not
a...
in the inner core.
Where is it on the map?
It's somewhere between. It's
so why did the Trade Federation?
It's fairly close to Tatooine because they can get there without a hyperdrive on limited fuel supply. Just watched Phantom Menace today. That's a fact.
Look out. But why did the trade, if they're so backwater, then why did the Trade Federation decide that this is the choke point to stop all trade?
Because I guess Naboo has resources or what the fuck ever.
Naboo be having resources. I know.
So, all right. Like, we can strike, you know, Palpatine coming from a backwater planet from the record. Naboo's the fucking greatest planet ever. That's where he comes from. But still, he's just a senator. And from being a senator, like, he manipulates all this fucking bullshit to
many
be
senators
the
become
leader
presidents
of the fucking galaxy.
They almost exclusively but he said, but, manipulate bullshit to acquire
right,
power.
Right. But we see
that's their job
but we see
title.
Palpatine, but my point is we see Palpatine be smart enough to knock all of these dominoes over to land exactly where he wants them to with him running the fucking galaxy.
To get
and you
fried
mean to tell me
just enough to be horrifically scarred to go in front
but,
of the Senate.
But still he ran the fucking galaxy for like 40 years. That's a win. He's smart enough to do that. But at the same time, he's like, I can't consolidate my fucking dark side power. It's fucking goofy. It's right.
Maybe he can. Maybe
the
dark side is too strong. You can only have a fucking sidekick.
It's not too
you know,
strong.
It's not like Batman. It's you not can too have a strong. Bunch of you have Spoiler and Robin and Red Hood and fucking Duke and all these guys running around. It's they stink. If they were Sith, they would fucking kill him.
It's weird stuff. Like Star Wars makes some weird rules, and I guess maybe that's part of the charm of the Star Wars universe. But yeah, the Mandalorians, like, we don't take our helmets off. It's not pragmatic. Why? Like, and especially like if you're in a limited place of resource at this point, where there's like 30 of you hiding out from the Empire, like. If you're on Mandalore and, yeah, you're helmetless and you're free and you can do whatever because you're around other Mandalorians, yeah, that's great. But guess what? You don't have that luxury anymore. Like, there's a handful of you on this backwater-ass Adelon 4 or whatever the fuck that planet is. Take your fucking helmets off. Like, are you fucking with the helmets on? Like, are you only eating alone? Like, you don't have a meal with anyone? Like, there's no personal connection?
Paul.
Like, am I thinking too much about this?
Yeah, I have no problem with any of these, like, rules that they're setting up within the story. My problem is just the execution of this episode was trash. I'm fine if they're trying to establish, like, rules for this race of people. Whatever. A lot of rules in religions are fucking retarded, so whatever.
True. 100% true. Matt, did you like anything about this episode?
Baby Yoda, of course.
Of course.
Who doesn't?
Meme King.
From going forward, this will be the Baby Yoda minute. Because clearly,
what do we call the like
every
little
week we're watching?
That he is that his like? I know he's not riding on it now because they trashed it. But it was like his cradle, right? It was like his little.
Yeah, his cradle.
Yeah, he's like walking around and shit now.
His car seat.
Yeah, his car seat. Do we think that Baby Yoda... So, in this episode, I feel like they were on that planet for a substantial amount of time, right? So, it was probably maybe some months, somewhere around there.
It felt like about 3 months, the way some of the dialogue worked out.
Yeah.
I didn't get that exactly. I thought maybe a couple weeks, but whatever.
I felt like it was a good amount of time. Where Mando was like, yeah, you know, maybe we can settle down here. It's been really cool. Like, we're in the far reaches of the galaxy. Like, nobody's going to find us here. So, my question is, so eventually a bounty hunter does come for young Yoda's head. What, how do we think they're tracking Mando and
Yeah, I was
Baby
wondering
Yoda?
About that. I don't know. I don't know if it's some kind of chip that, they put inside their target somehow.
My wife was like, he should just take his fucking robe off. It's definitely in the robe. I was like, I don't think it's in the robe.
I think it's
in his genetics or something.
Biological thing.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Like, I don't think it's the
clothes. Right?
Maybe. I don't think it's like an implant. I think it's like a space biological tracker.
Yeah.
It has to be unless they explain it, but...
And I don't have a huge problem with doing, like, the Space Town of the Week kind of thing, because that is in the Western... This is a Western.
And this is in the tradition of Westerns. You have, like, you go to the next town, you roll to the next town. And maybe this was just a shitty town. Maybe we got a bad director. Maybe we got a bad...
Oh, Bryce Dallas Howard.
I know who the director is. I know.
Is this a first-time director?
It's Bryce Dallas Howard.
Job for her?
Maybe.
I don't know anything else that she's ever directed.
So who knows? Maybe we got a stinker here. But I do like the... You roll to the next town, mm-hmm. and you encounter the next race of beings. I think that can only open up and broaden the Star Wars universe. It wasn't done with too much skill this time, but I have faith.
I'll tell you what.
What?
I didn't have a huge problem with this episode. This was her 8th directing credit.
Whew.
I
expect more from her.
Documentary, a couple TV movies, a couple
TV
shorts.
Movies. I get it now.
So, TV miniseries. Not an extensive directing credit, but I don't think the directing was the problem. I think if there was, I think the story was the problem.
The story was a problem, but the directing was bad too.
But the problem you have with it was just like boring ass like backwater.
Well, I think the way that it was handled, to me it felt a lot like I was watching cosplaying in somebody's, you know, backyard. It just lacked a strong Star Wars vibe to me. It felt like just like sort of partially Star Wars to me.
It wasn't weird like the other episodes were. And that's the thing that I came away with on the first 3 episodes, especially the second one, which people were deriding as filler. I thought it was just like strange and a little bit different. And there was like different stuff that happened there. And it was very isolated and small. And this one felt like we were fighting for the, even though it was just a village, it still felt like, oh, we're fighting for the soul of this fucking planet. And like, I don't need all that shit. Just let Mando do his fucking thing. Let him go from planet system to planet system and like just have real small encounters with people here and there. He doesn't need to be fighting like, he doesn't need to be having these big like village wide
wars. It could have been an episode of the A-Team, or it reminded me of Army of Darkness when Ash trained the kingdom how to fight with sticks so they could take on the army of the dead. It's just a story we've seen a bajillion times. And honestly, this wasn't done any better than any of those other versions. This episode just lacked in every possible way.
What I loved about this episode was the introduction of the AT-ST, because I thought it was really cool and it was really creepy. Like, up until the point where they were trying to get it to step into the water, like, they can't even fucking see what's down in the water. Why would they step forward, like, by that point? But when the cockpit lights first light up and it's red, and then it fucking stands up in the trees, and it's, like, walking through the trees, and all you really get is, like, the shape and the red lights of the eyes of the cockpit. Like, that was really fucking cool. I loved hearing the noise, like the sound effect of the blasters coming from it. Like, I thought the way they handled the AT-ST up until dropping it into the pool was really cool. But I also liked...
I agree with all that, Paul. That was pretty cool.
I also liked the built-in story of Cara Dune being a rebellion soldier. And, you know, it sounded like she had some knowledge of how we handled these things on Endor, and we can absolutely take this thing down in like a ramshackle way. And that was built into the story. So, yeah, the story was A-team-ish, Xena-ish, but it still had some cool Star Wars elements to me that I really liked.
Yeah, I mean, no bones about it. I still fucking really like the show. I'm excited for next Friday. Whenever whatever they release happens, I will absolutely be there for it.
I don't share that sentiment. I think that if the next episode is as good as this past one, I'm not sure that I'm going to be into it anymore. Maybe I'll catch it, you know, when it's on. But if you give me two pieces of garbage in a row, then, you know, then you're not going to get me to come back for the next one.
Yeah, Mando Minute lasted two episodes at most.
Three.
I want to go, well, officially branded registered McSauce Productions, two episodes. Because this wasn't the Mando Minute last week.
Look, with all that said, I have confidence that it's going to bounce back this week.
Unless it's another first-time female director, right? Oh!
I don't think it was her first time.
Oh, I mean, certainly not. Any final thoughts on this episode of Mandalorian?
Nah, I think.
I hope the next one's better.
I think we covered it all.
That's going to do it for us tonight. My name is Paul McGinty.
Ian Sharpley.
Back us out.
We'll see you next time.